And we are back with episode 266 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I'm so happy to see Bridget Nielsen still getting work. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not Bridget Nielsen. Never mind.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and what do you know, we all survived the end of Fringe over at the last episode. I'm glad we've all come back, and we have some new stuff to talk about.
And this is Bronze Thumb from Australia, and I don't think that's a standard issue prison uniform, but I'm not complaining.
No, neither am I. Yes, we are going to be talking about some returning shows, Being Human, the U.S. version, and Lost Girl, and also an episode of Once Upon a Time, and a few other things towards the end. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
As ever, we will talk about anything and everything in these episodes, so be warned, you will be spoiled. But this time we have actually waited a week or so you've had time to catch up before we do so.
That's right. And we are going to jump right on in with Being Human US, and here's the promo.
On Sci-Fi's Powerful Monday.
Mother's dead. They're all dead.
Josh isn't the werewolf.
We're bringing Sally back.
It's getting out of control.
Nothing like a vampire stripper to put things in perspective.
Okay, and Gary, why don't you go ahead and give us the recap?
Absolutely. We're talking about Being Human, the U.S. version, Season 3, Episode 1. It's a shame about Ray. In the third season opener, Aiden resurfaces to find the vampire community has changed a great deal. Meanwhile, Sally struggles to free herself from limbo. Josh and Nora stand up to Ray, and at the same time, a new threat comes looking for them in Boston. I really like this episode. I forgot how much I missed this show during the break. It's sort of interesting, you know, given how the show starts off with us having a ghost, you know, ghost, werewolf, and vampire. The vampire is near death, which strikes me as an odd thing. Our werewolf has been cured, and the ghost is about to come back to life. It's quite they really have become human, or at least are becoming it in a lot of ways. So I found that a nice little juxtaposition on how the whole series has taken off. They started off pretty early on with, I guess, introducing who it appears to me will be the sort of villain of this season, which is the witch that Ray and Nora enlist to help bring Sally back from limbo. So it seems promising. I'm hopefully looking forward to it. I'm really enjoying the Ray and Nora relationship even more than I thought I would. I'd forgotten how nice those two actors play off each other. So I was really nice, and even given the situation that they find themselves in, they seem rather accepting of it, which is, you know, surprising. There's no angst or, you know, anger, at least that I see at this point in the stage. So I have to say, I really enjoyed this episode, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. I think they're setting it up pretty well. I didn't talk much about the Aiden issue, just because in some ways I feel we didn't get that much of it. We know there's some sort of human virus that affects the vampires, but we're given so little information that I need to see, I think, another episode or two before I can really give a good view on where they're taking him this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree that, boy, we had so many problems and concerns coming out of the second season finale, because it seemed like they just were going so strong and then just veered back towards the British version way too much. And then, you know, we had the showrunner, the apparent showrunner change, and that's one of the things that I was going to bring up. But then they had this episode, and all of my concerns kind of went away.
Yeah, really.
You know, the whole thing with Josh and Nora really threw me for a loop, because I never thought in a million years that killing your werewolf sire would cure you. I didn't think that was real. I thought it was all just something that, you know, the other werewolves were saying just to mess with them, and yet Josh is human again, or so it seems. And Nora is not, which brings up some interesting possibilities down the road. And by the way, I'm really, really happy that Nora's still around.
Oh, yeah.
She's just so pretty. Anyway, and then Sally, who had been one of the weaker sides of the show, because the ghost always seems to be on this series, and then in the second season really came up with a great storyline with the whole Reaper thing, now, you know, it was in limbo, and this is how they bring her back. She's actually reanimated, and you know, yes, there's just going to be a million problems with that.
Oh yeah. And not to mention, you know, the whole thing of like, you know, yes, or, you know, she's reanimated, but is it a little crowded in there?
Was right. Exactly. And considering the problems that she's had with sharing her brain with other personalities before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then we have Aiden in that whole situation, which, boy, that's one way to get rid of the whole problem of what happens if he gets dug up early. Kill off everybody who knew he was imprisoned.
Yes.
With a virus that's apparently killing off vampires left and right, which puts him in a rather interesting position. Not to mention that he seems to have some people in his brain, too.
Yes.
Yeah. There's worse fates than having Mark Pellegrino messing with you in your head, I guess. Yeah, considering how many characters in this. He and Sam from Supernatural should get together in a support group somewhere. But... it was just a really good, strong premiere, and it really took away a lot of my concerns about the direction of the show. It's almost like they pulled it again, where they were playing on the expectations of the audience by making them worried that they would do the British show Redux again and just take it in a completely different direction. Bronstam, how?
Yeah, I know there was one.
Oh, go ahead.
One thing I was wondering about with that was because I remember with the shifts in showrunners and writers. I mean, this, you know, I don't know if this even applies anymore, but I know they originally said that, you know, yes, they'd watched series one, but then hadn't watched any of the subsequent series. You know, since, you know, especially since they were, you know, were deciding to go off on their own direction. So, you know, that was part of what made that second season finale a little odd. That, you know, okay, you said you weren't watching it, then why are you picking things up? But yeah, but certainly coming back, and not just in terms of not following the British model, but yeah, I mean, coming back and shaking things up so much was a very gutsy play, and I thought they really pulled it off well, and certainly with this new villain, and you know, the possibility that you know, yeah, they may have thought they got rid of Ray, but you know, if she's going to bring him back, you know, what are the implications there? Because when the whole situation with Josh and Nora, which, you know, I love the way, also, you know, even though, you know, they made it explicit later, but you know, the way they just tease that out of when the, you know, the vampire doesn't react to him but reacts to her, you know, I thought was very nicely done. Mm-hmm. And you know, but then again, you know, certainly even before we got to that final scene. And her finding Ray's body, it was, you know, I was really wondering, like, you know, no, okay, so he's not a werewolf now, but is he going to wind up in a position where he feels he, you know, has to become a werewolf again, you know, to protect Nora or protect some of the others? So, you know, yeah, I mean, it was just very well done, and basically bringing up all sorts of intriguing possibilities for where they go from here.
Oh, absolutely. And Bronstam, I'm sorry, I was going to ask you what what your reaction was.
I was... This is one of the most engaging episodes of the whole show so far, in my opinion. I just... From the get-go, it wasn't just what they were doing. The overall stories for all three of the main characters. I suppose four, because it feels like Nora really has integrated herself really well with this ensemble. So it wasn't just what was happening to the characters, it was the way it was being presented, the way that all this information was being, you know, slowly doled out, all the stuff with Josh and Nora, and slowly finding out exactly how things had gone down and all the changes was great. I mean, they had that moment very early on when Nora's at the psychic's office, and just that really good fake out. Yeah, who are you trying to contact? Josh. Josh, come on, get over me.
Yeah.
I had you know, and again, this version of being human shows that it seems far more willing to play with the original concept and go where the characters dictate and where the good stories dictate, rather than do what the British version did, which was try to cling on to things that weren't important or interesting anymore. I love this idea of coming back to the central, you know, to the central idea of the show that's right up there in the title. This, you know, what does it mean to try? What does it mean to be human when you aren't necessarily human? And it exempts it, but you know, by taking some of the main characters and actually, well, no, now they are normal, but are they really normal? How normal can you be after going through all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, all these interesting ideas, great stories, or, slowly finding out more and more and more about what's happened in this intervening time, expanding the mythology of this version of the Being Human universe. I mean, things like witches and this interesting take on zombies, which I really, really hope isn't anything like the British version's take on zombies.
Hmm. Yes, no kidding.
Terrible.
Yes.
Give me one of the Walking Dead walkers any day. And then just all these big plot points, the finding out about this virus in such a chaotic, stuttered way, because of course we're with Aiden, how would he find out? And then just between all these things, just so many great moments. It just all these great character beats from Josh really, really, he's really struggling with what he's done while trying to sort of toughen himself up for what he has to do. I mean, when they're digging up the body and he's just, I can't do this. I need a bigger knife. You can sort of see both things going on there. And Sally's just desperate optimism in even while, all these other characters just think she's completely barking up the wrong tree. However, I would say that the best scene of the episode has to be the hallucinatory conversations in the van with Aiden.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. Because normally you see shows where they have obviously hallucinations of people that aren't really there. But these, Aiden's hallucinations, they were just so dead on. It felt like having the whole cast, this main trio of characters, it felt like they were all really there. And then the fact that they're imaginary, it just kind of somehow added to it. And then Bishop comes in. And it's just like, yeah, okay, he is pretty compelling.
Yes.
Just after Aiden gets his butt headed to him, he just his hallucination just kind of shrugs. Sorry, man. That was just awesome. Literally the only complaint that I have about this episode was the song that they used at the end, not because it's a bad song, but because they played it 3 times a day on the radio for about 3 months over here, and I just got sick to death of it. That is my only problem.
Okay.
Yeah, I really liked it. It was a really good episode. The thing that kind of threw me off was right at the beginning when I saw that Jeremy Carver and his wife wrote the episode, and he was still listed as an executive producer. So I don't know if he just stepped down from being showrunner but is still highly involved with the show, or
mm-hmm.
what's going on, but certainly he's running the show over on Supernatural, so whether he's doing double duty, I can't imagine how he could do that, but I was glad to see his name there.
Maybe it was the leftover, he had worked on the script before he left or something, got credit.
Well, we'll find out, I suppose, but I guess being married to the person still running the show... were highly involved with the show.
Yeah, I imagine he's got some opportunity to contribute.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. All right, well, I gave this one an 8 out of 10. I really liked it. I thought it was strong, a good start to the series. How about you, Edmund?
I think I'll actually go up to a 9. I mean, I was one of those episodes where, I really couldn't find much fault with it. I'll stick with the 9.
Okay. How about you, Gary?
I'm right there with Edmonds. I gave it a 9. I thought this was an extremely strong episode. I thought it was a great start for the season. If they can keep this up, I'd be very happy.
All right. And Bronstone?
And I'm going to have to go a 9 as well. Wow. I was so impressed. It such a strong return. I mean, and maybe it's just kind of feeling the whiplash after the weak ending of the previous season, but it just came back with a vengeance. I'm hooked. I'm in. Bring it on.
Yeah.
There you go. I mean, I thought that with an 8, I didn't think there was any way I'd come in as the low grade score on this one, but there we are. It can only go up from here, right? Right? Okay, well, maybe not. But we are going to move on then to another premiere or season premiere that we need to cover here, and that would be Lost Girl, and here's the promo.
The last 2 nights that I've slept over, you've woken up screaming.
What do you want?
Bo.
Strung up and executed.
Whatever the working dishes out, I can handle it.
On the line means unprotected.
Brought this on yourself, you know.
Bo's killing again.
You're changing, okay? You gotta fight it.
I'm not changing into a monster. I've always been one.
Get out of my way.
I can't just sit by and watch her lose everything, Trick.
So what happens next?
Something most likely unexpected.
Okay, and Bronze Thumb, if you could give us the recap here and start us off.
I can probably manage that. Lost Girl, Season 3, Episode 1, Caged Faye. With the death of the last Ash, the new acting Ash uses Bo to prove himself worthy of becoming the next Ash. That sentence had the word Ash a lot. Going undercover means breaking Faye and human law and ending up as an inmate in a prison run by Amazon women. Can Bo and Lauren find out what is turning honorable warriors before it's too late for all of them? Dun dun dun. So, given that I had such mixed feelings about the second season of Lost Girl, like it was so up and down. I wasn't sure what to expect going into season 3, and I guess that was for the best, because if I'd gone in with high expectations, I think I would have been really disappointed.
Yeah.
This was not a strong episode. It's definitely not one of the worst, but it's just everything about it is so telegraphed and so obvious and so not surprising. And just the way that all these different things are put together, just the idea that, starting off with Bo on a crime spree and requesting sanctuary and stuff like that, it was too over the top. It was impossible to buy it. So then when Lauren finally does show up in the prison and the episode is trying to go, haha, fooled ya, she's still a good guy. No, you're not surprising us. That was not a surprise.
No.
So then, yeah. And I feel like it just kind of went downhill from there with just some really, really silly story ideas. I was just not engaging at all with these guest characters and with this plot of trying to figure out what the hell is going on with the prison. And even some of the most blatant fan service things of the entire show were not enough to get me back on board. That's it. Within the episode, there were some cool things. Like, I definitely liked being back with the ensemble, because I think it's a great ensemble and they have a bunch of really, really fun characters, and I just wish they'd gotten some cool stuff to do. I like the changes that they did make, not just sort of shoring up this, you know, this family relationship between Trick and Bo. The idea of Hale becoming the new Ash, like that, oh, yeah. I will give credit, that genuinely blindsided me.
Acting but Ash. It's,
yeah, well, acting. Like that blindsided me, but it was awesome. And it is very consistent with some of the things they established before. I mean, back in at the beginning of the second season, it was like the fact that he could have been a contender was a big part of the plot of an individual episode. However, now I'm very, very worried for Hale, given that every single season of the show has started off with meet the new Ash.
Hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like being the defense of the dark arts professor at Hogwarts. You don't want to necessarily be assigned to that role.
Let's just say there's not an alumni club for that job.
No. But you mentioned the fan service because, boy, for all that they were pushing the Bo and Lauren stuff right from the beginning of the episode, I mean, that was, the first 20 minutes after Bo was in the prison, they found a way to get those two together in some way, shape, or form every possible moment. But I still think that the show didn't pick up for me until Kenzie walked in the door. Not of the prison. Although I know that was another fan service moment.
Oh, okay, yeah, that was another fantastic moment.
Yeah. I just mean just when she fans. Walked into Trick's place, and it was just like breath of fresh air for her to be, kind of be there and have that moment. You know, it was like, okay, I'm remembering what I like about the show, because, yeah, everything with Bo supposedly going bad was just... The least convincing thing ever. It's like how stupid are the Dark Fae or whoever else if they fell for that one? But
yeah, there were definitely fun moments, and Kenzie's prison infiltration was just like beyond just the sheer fan service thing, was just hilarious. The accent, that character, it was I was in stitches. And on that sort of, it was also great that apparently Vex is going to be a more prominent character in this season, which I'm all for because he's just insane. It's not like anything. There is Vex, and he was fun, and he's thinking about, oh, I'm going to be the new partner, am I? Yeah, rock this. It was stuff like that just surprising, fun moments that there were so few of them that you know, more of that kind of stuff, and the episode would have jumped onto an average rating in my opinion. But yeah.
I mean, I think that was the biggest mistake was, you know, I mean, pushing Bo into this undercover operation right off the, you know, right at the top, and, you know, and not paying more attention to, and these relationships that they've built up over these two seasons, you know, and have, you know, showing us more of the regular team working a case and quipping back and forth with each other, and, you know, and really concentrating on that part. That's really the strongest part of the show. And although all the Bo and Lauren stuff did kind of amuse me, because at the New York Comic Con panel, you know, I did get up to ask a question, and then while I was in the line, they said, can't ask anything about the new season. So I had to quickly think up something else, because what I was going to ask about was, you know, okay, now that all of the impediments are out of the way, are we going to get our favorite love triangle back? But, you know, yeah, there was no need to answer it, because, ramping it up right away. And even the way they did that, I mean, you know, just kind of, you know, my sense throughout the whole episode was that it was like they were trying too hard. I mean, pushing the sex, you know, even in terms of having, you know, that almost soap opera-ish moment of, you know, yeah, Dyson, you know, I haven't told her I've got my love back, so of course we have to have, you know, the big reveal at the end of her, you know, her in Lauren's arms and Dyson looking on. Just, sort of some of the more, you know, more subtle and, you know, the sort of elements of the show just weren't there. You know, it's getting me a little worried for the way they're going to go this season. But maybe they will dial back and prove me wrong. I hope.
Well, I mean, for me, the thing that it's the stated intentions of the show right there in front of you, and the execution falling short of it.
Mm-hmm.
The things that they stated and they did were we're going to take the popularity of the bisexuality that Bo has and play it up to the hilt.
Right.
And just, you know, we know that this is, you know, just a lot of sexy, so we're going to find a reason to throw her into a maid's outfit, and we're going to get everybody in tight clothing all the time, and we're just going to have a lot of sexy fun. And yes, that part they do just fine. They've got it down. But we're going to play with expectation, because at the end of last season we showed that maybe there was a dark side of Bo coming out. So we're going to try to misdirect you by making you think she went bad and then having it turn out to be undercover and then coming back and hitting you with it again at the very end of the episode.
Yeah.
No, it didn't work at all. It was actually quite irritating. And that, I think, was one of the other mistakes, is that we just got done talking about how smart show like Fringe is and how well Being Human plays against expectation, and then we've got the execution of Lost Girl. Either be the funny, kind of fun, sexy show where you really don't care that much about consistency because it's just not that important, or actually try to do something bigger with your show. Because it seems like they're not quite sure what they want to do yet. And they're in season 3. So, yeah. I mean, there are so many strengths of this show that just seem to be not addressed in this premiere. As much as the previous show, Being Human US, made a mission, you know, kind of put their mission statement out there with their third season premiere to kind of say, no, we're not going to just ape the British version. You should have known better. And here are all the great, awesome things we're going to do. We didn't have any of that in this episode. I don't really feel like this really set us off in a direction.
Oh, it set us off in a direction, all right. It's not the one you wanted to.
You did have that scene at the very end of the episode, but that wasn't... I didn't watch that and think, oh my goodness! I watched that and thought, huh?
Yeah.
This show has never worked on the villain of the week. It never has, and in a large extent they give that up and then seem to trudge it back every, you know, at least for a filler episode or two about every six or seven episodes, and it fails horribly, and we, all of us, I believe, trounce them thoroughly every time they try and do it. And that's sort of what this felt like to me. It was a villain of the week without any real buildup. The strength of this show for me is the interpersonal relationships that, well, on, off, in, out, whatever, they're still there, and that's what seems to work. I would have loved to seen the first 5 to 10 minutes of them planning how to get her in there rather than start with this sort of on the run right off the bat thing. It would have been a lot more entertaining and enjoyable for me, because quite frankly, this thing, albeit people did look good in it, and I don't dispute that. And of course, Kenzie scene visiting was, you know, beyond complaint. But but those few things aside, this show stunk to high heaven. It was really lousy. You want to think that a show will lead with its first episode of a new season, as we were talking about with, you know, Being Human, and sort of set the pace as well as even start to set up the storyline. They did that with like 3 seconds at the end of the episode. That's really not setting up the storyline in my mind. I was very frustrated watching this. I had looked forward to the show coming back and was severely let down.
All right. Well, Bronze Thumb, I believe you gave this one a 6.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah, I can't give it more than that. It had some good parts, but it was definitely not a strong start. Gary, I have a feeling you're going to go below that.
I'm going with a 4.
Ooh.
This was real. I've been thinking about how we judge things sometimes, and I think if it's average, we should be around a 5, possibly a 6 if it has some other redeeming factors. And like as I said, of course, you know, women in tight clothing, I'm not averse to, nor am I. Kenzie's scenes are always hilarious, and I enjoyed those too. I even enjoyed a little bit of the intrigue, if you want to call it, about the backstory that this was a whole setup that we found later on. But that was pretty much it. and these little tidbits do not make for a good story. And so I rate those, it got a 4 for the tidbits and not for the story, because it didn't deserve it.
Fair enough. And Edmund, how about you?
I will split the difference and go with a 5, because fan service.
At least you're honest.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I mean, even if I were to go by my how our standard rating or scoring system goes, Gary, I think just from your comments, I can add it up to a 4 easily enough. Take away your personal enjoyment and take away the writing, and all you've got left is 4 points, so... There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that being the case, it's a big drop from where we started. We're starting off this season with a 5.25, and that is not a good place to start. But, you know, Lost Girls struggled towards the end of its season, definitely. Its finale, second season finale, got a 4.25, so it at least improved a little bit.
Well, you know... And I'm not trying to be, you know, bigoted or impose my lifestyle on somebody else, but, you know, I thought the bisexuality was over the top even for this show. This seemed to be pushing it a bit much.
It seemed like they were really, really trying to play on their reputation.
It was so much more. I'm feeling kind of afraid. They did it much better, I think, in the first two seasons. I mean, yes. Even the second season, whatever you say about the plot, that aspect of the characters, particularly Bo, they played it really, really well, because they just let it be there. It was just simply an aspect of Bo's character that, you know, no one gave a hoot about.
It's reminding me a little bit of Xena. And how in the first couple seasons they played coy with Xena and Gabrielle. And then as time went on and they became known as the gay-friendly show, they started to play it up more and more, to the point where you could see the moments that they were inserting just to play that up. And it became a little annoying, only because it didn't make sense in the plot. So it was just kind of there just to do it. And I feel like they're almost to that point right now. If they weren't still giving some kind of lip service, no pun intended, to the whole Bo Dyson thing, I think it would have been just completely over the top. even so, to me, I was watching, I was going, boy, you're really trying to just make some kind of, again, no pun intended, throw some kind of bone out there for the certain fandom out there. But I get your point, Gary, and no, I mean, lots of people already know by now that we're a fairly socially liberal group in general, but I really felt like this was targeting an audience big time. Mm. I mean, it was like not even pretending to have a, it was just boom, right there, first act, here you go. And yeah, it was a little much.
Because, you know, sometimes I think they do a reasonably good job with Bo and Lauren, which is why to see this travesty is even more insulting.
Well, the first season, I mean, the very first episode, the attraction that they had, I thought that it was very well done. It wasn't played up as something overly salacious or that kind of nature, where here I really felt like it was Cinemax type type material.
It was there just for the sake of having it.
Right. Well, the very definition of fan service. No other reason.
Disconnected from plot, from character, from anything.
Right. And you know, it just felt like a little amateur hour this episode. Stuff just was very clunky and just did not work. So a five, you know, round about a five is, it's not an unfair average, I don't think. But it also means that maybe they just kind of came back off their game. We'll see as the season progresses. But moving on to another show that we have quite often had certain concerns about, and that would be Once Upon a Time. We have another episode of that show here, so let's go ahead and run that promo.
Here we go back.
Where?
The Enchanted Forest. Our home.
All new next Sunday.
She's not gonna hurt you.
What if he wants to take me back?
Old rivals.
He took my wife, so I took his hand.
We'll face off.
You may want to turn away if this isn't gonna be pretty.
And for the first time,
this potion allows me to cross the timeline.
The real world is only a step away.
Now you can find yourself.
I wouldn't count on it.
All right, and Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give us the recap here?
Absolutely. This is Once Upon a Time, Season 2, Episode 11, The Outsider. Gold conducts an experiment to see if he can find a way across the town border without losing his memory. Meanwhile, Mary, Margaret, and David go house hunting, and Belle finds Hook in Storybrooke. In the fairy tale world, Belle and Mulan meet for the first time as they try to stop a beast ravaging the land. In my review for this one thing I've immediately brought up was I had to once again reference Hart as a Lonely Hunter from first season, which I still think of as the high point of this show, you know, where Sheriff Graham finally learned about the curse, you know, thanks to Emma's kiss, and, you know, and then got torn away by Regina, and, you know, sort of, you know, it was the big reveal that, you know, yes, you know, this isn't just stories in a book, this everything Henry is saying really is true. I kind of felt, you know, similarly about this episode in terms of what they were setting up, except, you know, all the hopes I had back in after that episode, you know, have kind of been frittered away in the intervening time. So, you know, this is the episode where we get a lot of backstory on Belle. You know, we start filling in some of the gaps of after she left Rumpelstiltskin, was out on her own, and you know, in the fairy tale world, you know, it was actually going back to that pub scene we saw from last season, and a little glimpse of her interactions with Dreamy, you know, going off on this quest, and, you know, yeah, basically wrapping the male hunters around her finger, and being, kicked off the cart just so they can go off in the wrong direction while she actually tracks down the beast. And then, but then basically the same thing's going on in Storybrooke where, you know, I really don't quite understand this whole thing of, you know, okay, yes, Cora and Hook are back, and except we're just letting the main characters not know about it. And, you know, and Belle manages to, you know, suss it out almost immediately and finds the ship and, you know, runs, you know, and confronts Hook, and it's kind of like, you know, as you know, it kind of amused me that, you know, in the recap, it's like, you know, yeah, they're, you know, Emma and Snow and Charming are, you know, were worried about their living arrangements while you know, this big threat is looming over them, and you know, and you know, and then what really got to me is, you know, okay, so, you know, so Belle does all their work for them, you know, finds the ship, finds Hook, you know, gets Basically rescues Archie, you know, and then Archie just sort of, you know, sheepishly shows up at the door and mentions, you know, oh yeah, it was Cora, and their reaction is, oh well, Regina's going to be really pissed that she's cleared. It's like, yeah. Wait a minute, you just got told that Cora's back on this, you know, not back, you know, it's on this side, and it's like, you know, and it just completely fell flat, and you know, I mean, you know, and then you know, the you know, certainly the. The other part of it is this whole thing of Mr. Gold having developed the potion so that he can get over the line. I mean, I actually was rather amused about his whole interactions with Smee first. Using him as the guinea pig, or perhaps I should say guinea rat, in terms of what happens later. But then I mean, the whole setup of. So he and Hook finally have their big confrontation, and he's, you know, sort of, you know, Bell's getting a look at his at his darker side, and you know, finding out about killing his wife, but she still, you know, still manages to appeal to his better side and keeps him from killing Hook, and just so he can then have the final. Showdown at the line where this character we've just gotten all this background has been really, building up all of this, you know, respect and sympathy for, you know, and then just to have her torn away at the end of the episode. And, you know, and yes, it's not as final as Graham's fate, you know, I'm sure, you know, I mean, you know, saying you've done something that can't be undone, I mean, in fairy tales and comic books, you know, is something that can certainly be corrected down the line, but still, it just felt like a missed opportunity. You know, yes, you finally built up a nice, interesting character again, and then just completely demolished it by the end of the episode. So, you know, sort of the classic with this show of, you know, one step forward and then two steps back. So we're still behind where we were when we started.
Yeah. So exactly, that was my biggest problem with this episode, is that you have Bell go from being already a strong character. To really picking up the mantle of Snow White, because Snow White is no longer running around being the badass chick of the show. And,
yeah.
You know, you take that, she's strong and self-actualized in both the fairy tale world and Storybrooke, and then you basically turn all of that and wipe it out at the end. So, who is she going to be now? She's going to be the Belle that was... kind of half crazy anyway. I mean, who was Belle before? I mean, I don't really know where they're resetting it to, and all it does is just, like you said, take you two steps back when you just took a few forward. And, you know, as much as I really enjoyed this episode for having Emily DeRavine running around in you know, fairy tale leather outfit, kicking butt, yeah. It was not necessarily enough to overshadow the fact that I still feel like the characters are being incredibly stupid. Yes, Regina was put out by the fact that you basically accused her of a crime, but within moments, the person who supposedly she killed is back in town.
Yeah.
Why doesn't everybody know about this immediately? Why don't they try to correct their mistake? Instead, they just go, oh, I wonder if it's too late for anything to happen now. Well, if you're that worried about it, why don't you actually do something? I mean, come on. They made such a big deal out of him supposedly being dead that don't you think him coming back and saying, hey, Regina's mother is back, and so is Hook. They're here. You know, all these people that we had this big problem with not so long ago, we just got Mary Margaret and Emma back.
Yeah,
maybe we should do something about this.
The people who you just escaped from.
Right. Oh, hey, you think maybe there's that they, you know, framed her since obviously I was alive? Huh. Well, maybe we'll think about that in a few episodes, but for right now, we're just going to kind of do our thing. Oh, that just was so frustrating. It's that old thing that I keep going on about where characters do things, don't do the most obvious things because the plot requires it of them to not do something. Does that make any sense? Let me try again. The things that they should be doing, they don't do because otherwise the plot wouldn't work the way that the writers want it to.
Yes.
Which is just the one of the worst things to in any kind of storytelling, where we're going to throw logic and reason and internal continuity of stuff. We're going to throw it all out the window in the, for the sake of doing something we think would be cool.
Yes. And that is just... it's not what this show could or should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, how about you?
No, once again, yet another episode that I'm disappointed in. Not quite so much as Lost Girl, but definitely disappointing. And I'm trying to sort of pull it apart and see what don't I like about this that much. And honestly, I think it's the promotion of Hook as a big villain. He's a two-bit guy. When they first introduced him, he seemed like he might be this sort of, not necessarily evil so much as self-centered. And, you know, almost maybe in a Han Solo sort of mode where he doesn't see why he should do this way versus that way. He's got his own life. But since then, they've actually turned him into a true, you know, bad guy. And it just doesn't work. There's too many bad guys on this show already. You know, they still toy around, you know, with Emma. You got Cora. There's enough juggling around right now to not introduce and Rumpel. You don't need a fourth major villain in this show. It's too much for it to carry. And I feel like they're grasping at straws to keep him that way. And that's part of the flaw we're seeing.
Yeah, I would agree with you. This whole idea of Rumpelstiltskin being the crocodile to his Hook was just perfectly fine, except for I think they're dragging it out at this point. They're forcing his villainy more than actually justifying it. I mean, they've shown him capable of good things, but then he just does bad things just because he can. I don't get it. The show is definitely just not quite hitting its mark again. Something that we've said many times, but to me, it's just, I hate it when I'm watching characters do things and it's against their own best interests or it's against their motivations and there's no explanation for why they're doing it that way. It just doesn't make sense.
So, it feels like they're grasping at straws for the storyline. They need to, you know, put something into place and go with it. It doesn't seem like they have anything.
I think that they have things. I think that what they have is a general idea of who the characters are and what their conflicts are and that they've kind of mapped it out on that level, but taking that and translating that into an ongoing storyline and making all those things parse out over time in a consistent way and in a strong dramatic fashion is where they're failing, because they're trying to expose all these interrelationships and conflicts as they go, but it's like I said, they're trying to force everything into this model instead of letting the characters evolve and show where they should be in conflict. They're putting all those conflicts out at the front end instead of letting them come out organically. It's like you were saying, Bronson, it's the worst thing you can do is to set everything down and then fail to evolve out of that and to recognize that there is a better way perhaps to tell the story. So instead they're cramming it into the conception that they had from the start.
Yeah.
At least that's a feeling I get. So, Edmund, what did you give this one again?
Well, I gave this one a 6. I mean, basically for, you know, all the great character work for Belle. But, you know, I mean, it was sort of like, you know, yeah, Belle was an 8. The rest of the episode was, you know, yeah, 4 or 5. So
I would agree with you on that one, definitely.
The 6 in the middle overall. But.
Yes, it gets the 6 for Emily DeRavine in leather. There you go. Gary, how about you?
Yeah, I'll go with a 6. That's reasonable. Wasn't great, but it wasn't quite the stinker that they've put out in the past. So, judging them by their own standards, I'll give it a 6.
Okay, and Bronstam?
I'll go with the 6 as well. Developing Belle's character was a good idea. Robert Carlyle, you know, hemming it up as the bad guy it's always fun. And props for, I mean, not having seen that trailer for the episode, I found the way that the episode ended to be actually somewhat surprising and sad. But there was still so many, so much stuff happening for the sake of let's do something cool rather than let's build, you know, organically build on our plot and our character development at this point. So 6.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's 6s all around then. And I suppose that makes sense. Let's see then. We still have a few little odds and ends that I wanted to go out and close this one out on, episodes that were reviewed over on the website, criticalmyth.com, that we usually don't talk about these shows, but I did just want to kind of throw these out there just in case anyone wanted to comment on them. And Greg wrote us up a review for American Horror Story, Season 2, Episode 11, Spilt Milk, which I don't think was the return, but it's at least the beginning of the season finale. And he gave this one again a 7 out of 10. And unfortunately, I have yet to watch this episode. I'm a little bit behind on the show. But it doesn't surprise me. It's the kind of show that it started off strong, but it seems like it has fallen into a little bit of a mediocre rut over the last several episodes, going back to roughly when they had that two-parter about Anne Frank. It kind of felt like that was taking the show a little far afield, and I think maybe it was actually doing that. Henry wrote up a review for Last Resort, which is a show that is ending shortly. Yep. Never really took off after its fall premiere. At Season 1, Episode 11, Damn the Torpedoes. But he gave this one an 8 out of 10. He said it was pretty strong. Anyone else watch Last Resort right now?
Yeah, I did. And I have to agree, it was. I think it was a strong episode. It built. It's continuing to push this this plotline forward, though the fact that it is going to turn out to be just this miniseries is looking more and more for the best, because they've got some big plot developments happening in this episode, the kind of things that like would really ridiculously shake up the status quo. All in all, I really, really enjoyed it. It put different members of the ensemble cast, you know, teamed them up with different people, did cool things. Which, yeah, I thought it was really, really enjoyable.
Okay. Very cool. And I know that we mentioned this show during the season preview, I guess we would call it, and that is Justified. And it began with the fourth season premiere. The episode was called Hole in the Wall, which just made me think about that really weird game show that they had on TV a little while back. But I don't think that's what it was about, no. This was another episode that Henry reviewed for us, and he gave this one, I believe, an 8 out of 10 as well. Anybody else watch Justified? I think we all agreed that we don't, but I figured we'd at least ask the question.
I'll get to it.
keep hearing how good it is, but I haven't fit it in yet.
Right. Now, this one, actually, Bronstum, I think you can speak to. Elementary. I know that you wrote up a review for this. This was Season 1, Episode 12. M. Literally just M. And I believe that you...
M, full stop.
Yeah, I believe that you gave this one a 9 out of 10.
I did. Easily the best episode of the show so far. Very comparable to Witness, the episode of Person of Interest in the first season that introduced Elias. Very comparable for all kinds of reasons, but I'll focus on the fact that it felt like it brought together elements of the show up to this point that felt one-off or, you know, not working, whatever, and brought them together in a narrative that sets up future stories, that kicked up the character development and things like that up to another level. And I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. You had the general premise of this episode is that there is this serial killer who is started, you know, offing people in New York, who had previously been working in London, and this version of Sherlock Holmes had tried to catch him previously, but on his most recent attempt failed miserably because he was in the midst of a very serious drug problem. And the said serial killer is played by Vinnie Jones, which is a really interesting casting choice and winds up being just so bizarrely effective. This episode has easily the most nods towards the Sherlock Holmes canon that you don't want spoiled. And yeah, it was fantastic.
Anyone else watch that show, or is it just Bronze Thumb?
Just Bronze Thumb for now. I've had it sitting on my DVR until I saw where it went, and now that Bronze Thumb has given that review, I will start catching it.
Yeah, I've been watching it infrequently, but I've been very satisfied when I do watch it. Lucy Liu is much better than I ever expected her to be in it. She's much more relaxed and calm than her typical portrayal of a character.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that this is the beginning of the next stage of Elementary rather than just a one-off in terms of its high quality. But yeah, I'm hopeful.
All right, well, we'll have to keep an eye on that one. Greg wrote up a review for Merlin, Series 5, Episode 2, Arthur's Bane, Part 2. And he gave this one, much like the first half, he gave it an 8 out of 10. And Brunstam, I know that you saw it quite some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You still agree with that 8's a fair score for that
one? Sounds good. It was a really solid episode, and it plays on the big cliffhanger at the end of the previous episode and sets up an interesting arc for the season. It brings in a big element of the Arthurian of the Arthurian legend, and it's a really solid part two of the premiere.
Yes, I would agree. I also felt that it deserved an 8 out of 10. Henry also wrote up a review for The Good Wife, Season 4, Episode 12, Je ne sais what, and gave it... they're getting very punny with their titles on that show. And he gave it an 8 out of 10, which is actually one of the higher scores that he's given one of those episodes in a little while. This has been a very up-and-down season from his point of view, so it's good to see that take a step back in the right direction. I know my wife watches it, but she's a little behind, and I haven't seen many episodes this season myself. I don't know that anyone else watches the show, so I'll kind of leave that aside. I wanted to finish this one out, though, with a reminder for anyone out there who did not watch this when we talked about it the first time and needed a prodding to see it when it's on Sci-Fi. Continuum, Season 1, Episode 1, A Stitch in Time, the series premiere. Bronze Thumb, back in the day when we started talking about this show, gave this one an 8 out of 10. And I reposted that review for anyone who is new to the show and wanted to see it. We still highly recommend it, do we not, gentlemen?
Oh yes, good. Ooh, gosh. Yeah. Go out and watch it. I heard very poor things about the first episode's ratings, and please, you need to see this show. It gets so good. Don't let Sci-Fi cancel it on you. Please start watching it. It'll be worth it. It might take an episode or two for you to get really into it. You will, and it goes to good places, people. Please watch it.
Oh yeah, and season two is already greenlit, and I think probably largely in the can. So make sure Sci-Fi keeps it on.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know that Sci-Fi, the fate on Sci-Fi is going to change the fate in Canada, because Canada, apparently it had incredible ratings, so
yeah.
I think that it's self-sustaining, but I still think it would be a shame if purported Sci-Fi fans were to take a pass on what is one of the best shows out there right now for no apparent reason.
Yeah, and given that the first season is already done and pretty much the second season is going to be filmed and shown too, you don't have to worry that they're going to kill it on you in the middle of the season and stop production. They're already in the can. They're probably getting this reasonably cheap. The ratings won't have to be great for them to keep it up and going, because they're not actually laying out much money to get it.
Yeah. So please pay attention to this, guys. All right, and that will be the wrap-up of our little wrap-up there. And hopefully this inclusion of other content that's on our website that we don't get to talk about too much here will point you in some good directions, or maybe warn you off of certain shows. But everything that we talked about that was reviewed on the website and that we haven't been talking about here was average or better. So it certainly is content that is worth looking into. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time.